We'd like to take a moment to talk about Jane, one of our sponsors who helped make this episode possible. Jane is a practice management software built for every kind of mental health practitioner and is thoughtfully designed with your clients in mind. Jane makes it convenient to meet with individuals, couples, or families, whether that's online, via Jane's telehealth options, or in person.
From day one, you can expect unlimited customer support through onboarding that sets you up for success and a 99.99% software reliability that ensures that Jane is always ready to start the day with you.
Just as you are always learning and improving, Jane is too. The team at Jane values customer feedback and uses it to design even more helpful features. So you can think of Jane as a software that grows with you.
If you're curious to see Jane in action, head to jane.app/mentalhealth/US to book a free one-on-one demo. You can also mention the code DCPOD at sign up for a 2-month free grace period on your new Jane account. Hey everyone, you are listening to the Divergent Conversations podcast. We are two neurodivergent mental health professionals in a neurotypical world. I'm Patrick Cassell.
And I'm Dr. Neff.
And during these episodes, we do talk about sensitive subjects, mental health, and there are some conversations that can certainly feel a bit overwhelming. So we do just want to use that disclosure and disclaimer before jumping in. And thanks for listening. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Divergent Conversations. Today, we are tackling the myth of you can't be smart if you are ADHD, or if you are autistic, you also have an intellectual disability, or all autistic people are geniuses or savants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically, there's a lot of misunderstandings around how IQ and neurology intersect. And what we know is that for both ADHD and autism, it spans the whole intellectual spectrum. And that is a big misunderstanding within popular culture.
The end.
Episode done.
Yeah. So, I mean, we hear this a lot, right? So let's tackle the ADHD side first, because I think we both know that we're going to diverge more into the autistic side. So you can't be smart and be ADHD. Mm-hmm. Complete and utter bullshit, right? Like, ultimately, where does this myth and misunderstanding come from? Because ADHDers struggle with executive functioning, distractibility, impulsivity, the whole gamut, right? So what does that ultimately look like in scholastic and workplace environments?
Yeah, so it looks like struggle. And then a lot of us will internalize, oh, well, I'm not smart.
Right.
Or that's how the teacher perceives us. And then we also know there's this relationship of how people perceive us kind of can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if there's a young child who's ADHD, and the teacher, especially if the teacher knows it and they start relating to them in that way, then that child, it kind of sets them up for a long struggle with school environments on top of the ADHD, just the experience of how the teacher's perceiving them. And then even more so for Black and Brown ADHD children, because there's also potential for racial bias to be in the mix as well. So there's also just... there's the ADHD aspect, but then there's also the social aspect of being an ADHD child navigating that system.
Right.
And then same thing in college, like there's lots of research. We know ADHDers are more likely to drop out of college. On average, it takes us longer to finish college. So all of these struggles that we have navigating traditional school environments easily gets translated to you're not smart, or the other one I hear is you can't be successful and have ADHD.
Yeah. Yeah. And it that's a painful one. The, you know, you're not smart, you can't be successful. And of course there are, and I just want to say, like, with everything we've talked about, there's nuance and it's a paradox and it's not binary. So there are obviously going to be ADHDers who do struggle with their intelligence that are not successful. And it's not like a end all be all of if you're ADHD, you are not smart, you can't be successful. I know so many ADHD entrepreneurs who are so unbelievably successful.
And then there's so many ADHDers who really struggle to be successful.
Right. Both. Exactly.
Yeah, both are true.
And it's always like a question of the chicken or the egg. If it's like, if we had the right accommodations and supports in place, could this person be successful? And how are we defining successful, right? I think that's important to think about. But what you mentioned about scholastic environments in schools, I mean, especially for Black and Brown kids, it's going to be labeled as behavioral challenges. It's going to be labeled as like defiance.
Yeah, ODD, oppositional defiant disorder, conduct disorders are, we know that they're much more frequently diagnosed among Black and Brown ADHD children, and then especially in the school environment. And that becomes a pipeline. Like, it becomes a pipeline for school to, you know, detentions to prison. That's another thing. We haven't talked about that, but the population of ADHDers in prisons is much higher than the general population, which makes sense. Again, back to that idea that we talked about in a recent episode of undiagnosed ADHD is destructive. Like, it'd be really interesting how many folks in prisons, like, that it was unsupported ADHD, undiagnosed. And then, especially if you're throwing on top of that other identities that are leading to systemic injustice. And I mean, that could tree branch into a whole conversation on our incarceration system in the States and how messed up
we should that
is.
Do an episode on that. Yeah. I was a criminal justice major, by the way, in college, and I spent a lot of time in prisons and jails. And I want to say, like, if I was not a cishet white person, man specifically, I'd probably be in jail or prison. I did a lot of destructive, illegal shit as a kid and a teenager and a young adult. And I got caught for it all by both law enforcement and parents. Mm-hmm. And I never got in trouble.
Dang. We should talk about that. Yeah. I mean, I got arrested when I was 13. Mm-hmm. That experience would have been really different if I wasn't white.
Absolutely. 100%. I've been thrown in cop cars. I've been driven by cops to my house for doing illegal, destructive stuff for them to give my dad.
And then it's like, we'll just give you a ride home. Yeah. Like, that's the response. Yeah.
They just told my dad, they're like, we're going to watch him until he's 18. And that was
it. This is interesting because we've talked about, and I know both in our personal, like, social medias, we've talked about this, but also probably I'm sure on the podcast about how risky it is to have a sensory meltdown in public when you're Black or Brown. We haven't talked about how risky it is to be an impulsive, risk-taking child who's ADHD when you're Black or Brown, especially in the United States context.
And the United States context, and just to reference Tiffany Hammond of Fidgets of Fries again, it can very well lead to death. It can lead to police brutality. It can definitely lead to incarceration unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you live in a racist society and you are inherently racist at just through development, through the culture that you live in, you're going to have that bias when you see a Black or Brown kid having a sensory meltdown on the street.
Yeah.
Or when you see a Black or Brown kid being impulsive or taking risks.
Or shoplifting, right? Like that's what I was arrested for. Yeah. And it's going to have a different outcome.
Yeah, it's really fucking sad.
Yeah.
We could do a whole episode on that, and maybe we will, because I think that's actually a really important one that we have not touched on.
Yeah. For this intersectional piece, huge shout out to Sandra Coral, who we've also had on the podcast. They have a book, It's Never Just ADHD. I love the design of the book, and it's for educators, but I think a lot of folks can benefit from it, where it's basically each chapter is different case conceptualizations, where it talks about, like, the kind of the, like, what the teacher might be experiencing based on the different intersections of the different ADHD children in the chapters. Right. But it does such a good job of looking at how these intersections show up in the classroom, but then how the teacher's reaction to that can shift based on those intersecting ideas, identities, words.
Words. The third podcast in a row today, for those of you who don't know that we're batching, and that's why I'm wearing the same cow shirt. You would be inconspicuous because your outfit does not often change. So, like,
I'm always in black. Yeah.
Yeah, but
I
I'm
actually
wearing.
do that on purpose though when I record, because like when I'm recording courses, I kind of like the videos to be consistent. My
For
hat though
sure.
is different.
That's true. Different hat.
Different
Same
hat.
you.
Same me.
Okay, so ADHD side for sure. And ADHD, being ADHD does not equate to having a certain level of intelligence. I think we want to name that foundationally here. And for those of
Yeah.
you who are ADHD, who are in that shame space of like, this is what I've been told my whole life. This is the messaging that I receive. Here's my internal narration and my internal critic and voice. I can never finish anything. I've dropped out of college. I've had to leave jobs. I've had to do certain things. That does not mean you're not a smart human being. And
Yeah.
that equate, there's no correlation there despite the messaging that you're receiving.
Yeah.
And it just, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I think the part that gets confusing is, so we do have executive functioning struggles, and that's kind of a forward-facing, like it's a forward-facing intelligence. And what I mean by that is how smart a person looks to the outside or to ourselves. I think when someone has really good executive functioning, they are perceived as smarter because they're able to, like,
Quote unquote,
time
fully.
manage and finish tasks
Yeah.
and all of those things. So I think it's confusing when someone is, say they are smart, but then they have pretty significant executive functioning struggles. That's confusing because it's almost like I've got this power, but I don't have a system to like channel the power effectively,
Right.
if that makes
Yeah.
sense, because the
Makes
executive
perfect.
functioning is like the tools and the skills that would help you to really implement that intelligence in ways that are helpful as we're navigating work or school or just even life.
Yeah, absolutely. That's 100% correct. And we're not even, we did a giftedness series, but we're not even gonna throw like giftedness into the equation either, because like that is an impactful conversation that we've of the intersectionality of like autism, ADHD, giftedness, and that certainly further complicates things when executive functioning struggles are in play.
Yeah.
Like myself.
Yep. Well, and these kids also might struggle with like placement because they might not be placed in gifted classes because of the executive functioning struggles. But
Right.
then the kind of typical classroom is too understimulating for them.
And then
And
you're going
so
to have
unless they're put in the
to.
gifted program with accommodations,
That's
they're
what
gonna
happened to
struggle.
me, because
Yeah.
I struggled mightily because I was so freaking bored all of the time. So I either acted out, disrupted the class, still somehow got straight A's, would not go to class because it was so boring. And I just felt like I was always floating in spaces that I didn't belong in. Like I just never felt like I found my quote unquote like home, so to speak, in school and in
Did
work.
you feel smart moving through school?
I just equated straight A's with being smart. So I just knew like I could get hundreds on my tests, I can get hundreds on my papers. I always got straight A's, but I don't know if I felt smart. I just knew that I could do the work very easily. I didn't know if that meant I felt smart, though. I just knew like this is easy. I still don't feel
Yeah.
smart a lot of the time. I'm like, I feel like I'm bumbling and like stumbling through life and like just somehow piecing it together. That's how I often feel.
Yeah, I often feel that way too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Which is
Transition
why I like
time.
having notes before we record. So I'm like, can I actually quote the studies and have the names? Because otherwise I'll just bumble through it, which I appreciate that it's important to be able to do that too, I guess.
I want to give you a lot of credit, like from where we started to where we are now, because I think, like, I feel it feels to me, and I don't know if it feels like this to you, that these conversations come more naturally now, and your guard has gone down quite a bit. Where I think you used to really live up here, right? Like in your head with your research and your studies and the data. Hey everyone, it's Patrick, one half of Divergent Conversations. Some of you may know that I own a group therapy practice in North Carolina, Resilient Mind Counseling. We specialize in supporting the neurodivergent LGBTQIA+ and Black, Brown, and Asian communities online and across North Carolina. We also have limited in-person openings at our offices in Asheville and Cary. We really love working with clients who are coming to terms with both autism and ADHD discoveries later in life or questioning, as well as the intersections of race, gender, identity, and orientation. All of our therapists have lived experience and identify as ADHD, autistic, or ADHD. Our team of affirming therapists offers a safe, anti-racist, anti-oppressive, inclusive, and accessible space where you can show up exactly as you are. No masking, no judgment, and no need to make eye contact, just real connection and healing. We accept most commercial insurances like Blue Cross Blue Shield, United, Aetna, and MedCost, as well as self-pay options. We currently have openings for new clients, and you can visit our website at resilientmindcounseling.com. And if you would prefer, you can either text or call to get started to our HIPAA-compliant phone line at 828-515-1246. You can also email us at scheduling@resilientmindcounseling.com.
I think I have, and I still have this, but I think probably just with exposure it's helped, is fear of getting it wrong, especially because it's like, once I say it, it's out there. And because we don't pre-script what we're going to talk about, I don't have a chance to go back and like make sure I have the researchers I want to credit. But I'm also have this I have a lot of fear around saying an idea and not crediting the right person. Like it's a kind of intellectual respect thing. So I think with exposure, I've just gotten more comfortable with it, or more comfortable with being like, I know there's a study, but I can't remember the name right now. Yeah.
Fair enough. It's not a very autistic process that we have, huh?
No, that is interesting, because we're always like, well, we always talk about autism, but we have a more ADHD process.
That's true. That's true. We just kind of say, here's the concept. Let's see where it goes.
Yeah. Or maybe it's an intuitive process. I also think of both of us, like maybe it's not an autistic or ADHD thing. Maybe it's just, we do an intuitive process. And I think of both of us as pretty intuitive.
Yeah. Agree with that.
Okay. Or authentic. Like we'd rather be authentic than like, here's our bullet list of things.
Oh, any day of the week for me. But yeah, that's just my personhood.
Yeah.
Okay, we're switching gears now. We were talking about autism being linked to being intellectually disabled.
Yeah, so that, and I mean, I think this is slowly going away, but I think partly there's just most people, if you took a random person off the street of the U.S. or probably in other countries and asked what they knew of autism, they don't know much. But a lot of people, I think, would equate it with an intellectual disability. And that's a lot of early services and early research focused more on autistic people who did have co-occurring intellectual disabilities, or on autistic people who were non-speaking. And then there was that false assumption that all non-speakers have an intellectual disability, which we know is not true.
Right.
But so I think that idea is still out there, as is the opposite, which is the savant, the rain man. It's like, oh, so you've got some kind of special skill, which savants are more likely to be autistic, but not all autistic people are savants. A small percentage of us are.
Isn't it fun to unpack these things with like all this nuance and all this complexity? It's like, yeah, this is sometimes true, but sometimes it's not true and it's not always true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But that's an important distinction. And, you know, I think that that's probably often where the superpower kryptonite trope comes into play too, when we're thinking about like savant level intelligence or like certain abilities or certain skills that some autistic people possess. Doesn't mean that all autistic people possess them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That could be another, we were talking about some of the common responses we get around, oh, I'm autistic. That can be another one of like, oh, do you have like a special skill or what's your secret skill? And it's like, oh, no. Not a savant.
Don't understand like complex coding. Definitely don't understand most of math. Definitely failed statistics in college 3 times. I mean, I just was like, why do I need this in my life? What am I ever going to do with this? I think that's just important. Like this is something I want to highlight in my book over and over and over again, is that this is not a binary experience. Like this is not black and white.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
There are going to be like common groupings of traits and experiences and struggle areas. And there's going to be very vast differentiation as well. And I think that's important to hold the both and, which I think can be really challenging, especially if we're talking about like autism and black and white thinking.
Yeah.
It's like, absolutely. How do we unpack all this nuance if we also have black and white thinking?
Because we fall into that. And this is where I've learned a lot from Callie, Black Spectrum Scholar, on this is, so, and I've put this in my identity development model for neurodivergent folks, is one of the ways of thinking, and I fall into this for a little bit, is we can have that rigid thinking of like, oh, all autistic people are hyper empathetic, or all autistic people are justice sensitive. It's like, no, that's not true. It might be nice to think that, but that gets into that kind of Aspie supremacy of like, well, autistic people are better than autistic people. Or I see the sneaky place I see it is around the non-hierarchical. Like, well, we're non-hierarchical. So those neurotypicals, they're easy to like kind of corral into like a herd, and they'll just follow the leader. And it's a really demeaning way of talking about autistic people. Not that there's not like some kernel of truth in that, but again, it's that all or nothing thinking.
Yeah.
That can, and I think there's a part of the identity development model where we're kind of feeling a lot of pride in our identity, where it makes sense that a lot of us experience some of that.
Yep.
And that cognitive rigidity shows up.
Yeah. And I think we're going to do an episode in this series of all autistic people are empathetic, mm-hmm. and really unpack the types of empathy that exist. And I know that kind of correlates to like highly sensitive personhood and deep feeling and very like intuitive. And it's just the reality of like, some people don't experience any of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Bring in ultrathymia into the mix and interoceptive struggles. And I'm like,
I think this is what makes autism so confusing, is I think of being, you tend to be on an extreme, is my experience. So a person tends to be like extremely hyper-empathetic or experience hypo-empathy.
Right.
And so there's a lot of ways that we experience the extremes, and both can be true. It's just, I think we tend to have more extreme experiences of whatever kind of trait we're talking about. Except IQ, it's full spectrum. We can be anywhere on the spectrum.
Just to double down on that, you know, it makes writing this book really freaking hard, because
I
just keep thinking nuance, mm-hmm. like in everything. And then do you get too much in the weeds of like over explaining the nuance of all the things? That's what I'm trying not to do. It's like,
because then is it like a textbook versus, so I struggle with so self-care for autistic people, most of the reviews are really nice, but of course, occasionally I go and read the bad ones. But even in reading the bad ones, sometimes that's a helpful learning for me, because I do realize some of the feedback there is, I was talking from my experience and at times definitely globalized to like autistic people. And it's like, it's really hard to talk from our experience and try to talk to autistic people and then also nuance it. And you might experience the opposite of this, right? Like, that's hard to write a book that way.
It's really fucking hard. And every time we do an episode, or every time I consume more information, I'm like, oh no, I have to change this, because this is not what I think anymore or how I experience something. So it's, what a fun experience that this has mm-hmm. been. Yeah.
Yes. Just have a really, really good forward. I really liked Donna Henderson and Sarah Wayland in their Is This Autism book. I really liked their, I don't know if it was their forward or first chapter, but I just thought they did such a good job outlining like, here's what we know now. Here's the language that's commonly used now. It might change by the time this book is in print. It will definitely change in 5-10 years.
Yep.
So I think building that into your writing.
Got it written all over the place. Like, this is just my experience. I am a cishet white man talking about my experiences. Like, there's so much nuance. I'm not trying to like typecast. I don't want to typecast and say like one size fits all experience. But the reality is, there are also going to be people who read it and are like, this is fucking horrible, or this doesn't define my experience. This is terrible. And that's just a reality that I am going to have to live with and shrink away from.
Well, and that is Yeah, I mean, that is part of the reality. And back to the because it's not a binary. So there will be people that'll read it and not connect with it, but then there'll be a different autistic book that they will connect with.
Exactly.
And I mean, same thing with my work
Sure.
or our podcast. There's people that listen to this and are probably like, I'm not connecting to this at all. And then there's people who do. Like,
True,
so it's
true.
so good we have so this emerging, like there really are so many like autistic ADHD podcasts and books and like creators. And it's good we have so many because just because someone's autistic or ADHD doesn't mean we're going to connect with their work or the way they teach or the way they talk about their experience.
100%. And I think the takeaway from this whole series, right, is again, not binary, lots of variation because humans are all diverse in some way or form. And not everyone has the same experiences. And whether that be environmental or biological, genetically, socially, economically, like not everyone has the same supports in place. Like, so it's just important to continue to drill down on that, I think.
Yeah. I think the other piece of it is and I think this is true of both ADHD and autism, but definitely autism is it rarely walks alone. I have yet to meet an autistic person who's just autistic. So
Right.
it's this is a weird metaphor, but sometimes I think about autism as like tofu. I don't know if you cook with tofu much. We're
I do
vegetarian
not.
family. So, and tofu will kind of take on the flavor of whatever, like the seasoning or whatever you're cooking with it. Sometimes, and this metaphor breaks down because autism's more than tofu. But sometimes I think about how autism can take on the flavors of whatever's with it. So, if it is autism with a co-occurring intellectual disability, that's going to look very different. Or if it's autism with the gifted spice put on, or if it's
Right.
autism with dyspraxia and
Right.
like motor coordination, or autism with bipolar, autism with OCD, like it's gonna take on the expression of our autistic traits will take on the flavor of whatever is in the mix with the autism. And
Yeah.
typically there's many things in the mix. And so I think that's also part of why it can be so hard to nail down, well, this is the autistic experience.
Yeah, that's really well said. Autism and tofu. I actually think that's a good metaphor. I just despise tofu so much.
I actually don't like it either, but Luke cooks with it a lot, and so I'm familiar.
Right. Anything else? I think we covered it, the myths in general. So I feel good.
Oh, I think one thing we could add is I know for ADHD is it does tend to take longer to get diagnosed if you have a higher IQ, partly because you do develop more compensation strategies.
Right.
And so that can prolong diagnosis or just make it harder to get diagnosed as ADHD.
Well said. Are
And
you going to
so,
end
yeah.
it? I love
We
when
can
you
end
end
it
it.
there.
It's fun.
You love when
Perfect.
I end. You like seeing me squirm and get awkward.
I think, sure. Yeah. I mean, maybe. I won't put you in that position. All right, y'all. Thanks for listening. All the major platforms, podcasts, YouTube, all the things that we always talk about on Fridays. Make sure to go check out Jane App for mental health and medical care. If you need a new medical record system, 2 free months with code DCPOD at checkout. And goodbye.
Hey, it's Dr. Neff here. This season, we are clearly talking about autistic burnout, a topic that Neurodivergent Insights has covered extensively. So, if you would like more resources to supplement your learning, we've put together a page where we've curated all of our autistic burnout resources, freed and paid resources. We have lots of articles on autistic burnout. We have an upcoming free email course that's going to be released soon. We have workbooks on autistic burnout. So if you'd like to check out our resources, again, both free and paid, You can go to neurodivergentinsights.com/burnout-resources. It's linked below and in the show notes. I hope you don't need these resources, but if you do, they are there for you.